Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, May 6, 2006. I'll be the host today, Marcia Mary Baker from EIR News Service. And our topic, for those of you who you may have seen it on our website, and those of you listening in by telephone and participating that way, is the latest breaking initiative from Mr. LaRouche in terms of a document he released May 3rd that's now in international circulation called it's emergency legislation now for federal intervention into the auto sector. It's a document that's merely 6 pages long, especially for the attention of Congress, and it's been going out to them, but also for state legislators, local activists, labor leaders, United Auto Workers, others around the country. And I'm going to mention a few marching orders right up front, even before I introduce our guest, because this is what we're going to discuss today, that we want everyone to get involved, to get this document and read it, to get it out, to circulate it, to mobilize, to force the issue in Congress. This is not something we can see what happens. We have to make it happen. We need the resources. That means people's funding of the effort. It means their own time, their own thoughts, and their insights, and backing of especially the front-end force on this, which is the LaRouche Youth Movement. And related to this, there is in circulation over the last week a new DVD from the LaRouche Political Action Committee on retooling auto for world economic revival. So this focus then determines that who we're very glad to welcome as guests and have discussed things today, and we welcome your emails and welcome those of you who listen by phone live or later in the week to call in on the phone. I'm glad to have in the studio with me for Executive Intelligence Review the Economics Department, Paul Gallagher. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you. Hi, Marcia.
And I want to say that Paul has literally just finished in the last few hours the finishing touches on material going into the Executive Intelligence Review and to the EIR online that backs up, it's a kind of situation report on the threat, the mass shutdown of the auto sector and machine tools. Paul will be talking about that. But he and Mr. LaRouche and Helga Zepp LaRouche participated in a conference call yesterday, that's May 5th, with the LaRouche Youth Movement Transatlantic throughout Europe and here in the United States, and discussing just our topic for today. And so in particular, we're very glad to have the LaRouche Youth Movement from both Detroit and Washington, D.C. on. Bill Roberts in Detroit, are you there? Welcome.
Hello, Marcia.
Great. And Michael Rowland in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, thank you.
And I'll just say now that Bill Roberts, who's based in Detroit, and I understand is from the Midwest, that's Western Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
Okay, Pennsylvania. But Bill, in the course of things, I know you have many things to say both historically about what kind of precedents we have for federal intervention into Michigan and into the auto sector, but people may know that last Saturday in Lansing, Michigan, was a mass rally organized against this auto shutdown that's unfolding, and Bill can say more about it. And likewise, over the last week or so, since the Easter recess, the spring break of Congress, Congress has been back in session, the Senate and the House, and Michael Rowland has been there on Capitol Hill meeting with people, especially from the 5 core Midwest states, which is the core of the auto belt of the United States and the world. So we'll hear from him in a minute. But Paul, what I'd like to do is turn first to you, and unless you want to answer differently, I was thinking of beginning on the objective side first, before the subjective side. Could you characterize these 6 pages of what the key points LaRouche is calling to people's attention? I advise everyone to go ahead and read it for themselves. And then after that, too, characterize the kind of objective emergency condition of what remains of our machine tool and auto sector in the country.
Well, to begin with, to characterize it, let me read something from the middle of this. Again, this is online on www.laRouchePub.com now as an outline of intended legislation. It'll be followed within a couple of hours by a list of 65 auto plants that are about to be closed that are part of the intended capacity to be saved by this legislation and redirected. And then later tonight it will be followed by a the posting of a map so that this can be clear as to where this capacity is. I'm reading from LaRouche's intention, his outline of intention here. What is needed, therefore, is the creation of a federal public corporation by act of Congress. This action should adopt the elements of the automotive industry which are being discarded by the automotive corporations and which fit the characteristics which I have identified broadly in this present report. So that's number one. We have 75 to 100 million square feet of very highly machined, very capable and versatile industrial space, which is in the process of being abandoned, as he says, discarded by the automobile makers, by the automotive industry. All this capacity is slated to be shut down by next year, most of it this year. And on top of that, we have very large unused capacity, even in those facilities in the auto sector around the country, which are not scheduled to be shut down. They are operating typically, as for example, in the large Lockport, New York complex, one building at 30%, another building at 50%, another building, production building, completely empty and not operating at all, and two others operating more or less normally out of the five main buildings. That gives you an idea of those, the unused capabilities in those plants which are not scheduled for shutdown, not to speak of the 75 to 100 million square feet in 65 facilities that we know are going to be shut down. What LaRouche does in this document is he makes clear to a prospective Congress or members of Congress who are going to prospectively turn this into legislation that they have to, number one, deal with that capacity, save it. I'll go into that more later if we wish. Number two, save it by absorbing it and reorganizing it under a federal corporation, at least temporarily, using the many historical examples of this. This was done in World War II under the initiative of the auto workers initially so that these plants which were unused could make aircraft and other munitions. It was done in part after World War II when some of these plants were used for the space, for objectives of the space programs, others for munitions in the Korean War, others for still other things. It was done with other industries and ironically, most recently, in 1987, when the savings bank, or a large chunk of the savings bank industry in the United States was taken over, or the savings bank sector, was taken over by the Resolution Trust Company, a very recent example of the federal, literal federal absorption of, in that case, banks which were in the process of disappearing in order to save their function as banks. He secondly urges Congress to save the engineering workforces there, which are considerably smaller, and thirdly, to make a particular emphasis on saving the machine tool, the tiny fraction of the auto sector, which is an even tinier fraction of our industry as a whole remaining in the United States, the very skilled machine tool workers and die makers who hold essentially build the machines and hold up the rest of the structure. And then he identifies five areas in which critically needed infrastructure, elements of which or major parts of which can be built in the auto plants, from the navigation systems, locks and dams, which are broken down all over our river systems, the ports, which are broken down all over the Gulf area, the lack of a national rail system, elements of which can be built by auto, the as a high-speed system, the need for nuclear power plants, big additions to electrical power in general, and particularly nuclear power plants, and the development of fission power, experimentally, and other critical infrastructure that can, that, in other words, that Congress has to take this capacity. It's either going to use it for these purposes or the nation's going to lose it.
Thank you. Speaking of use it or lose it, and I reiterate to people, Paul said, look on this website, www.larouchepub.com, LARUCHEPUB.com, and you'll see there's 65 plants listed, and in a short while there'll be a map and so forth. Let's toss around many of these points. I wanted to ask one thing on, Paul, you began with the idea of you mentioned historical precedents for intervening to save capacity. And Bill, why don't you mention the one case of Adrian, Michigan, where President Kennedy acted?
Sure. Yeah. Well, this particular case of Adrian, Michigan. Adrian is a small town in Michigan of about 20,000 people, and today it has one of the Delphi plants, which is obviously the people of that town know what is in store for that plant, and it has a sort of spells out a certain type of doom for the economy of Adrian. What's going on with Delphi right now? But this is a plant which I should mention has a story behind it, because it was built in during World War II, and it's sort of a perfect case of one of these plants that just exemplifies the idea of the capability to retool for any purposes. Because it was originally used as an aluminum plant in World War II, creating parts for airplanes, and then it was later retooled to produce things like uranium fuel rods in cooperation with the federal government, and there was some, and then of course later on when GM bought it up. It was retooled to be the major center for plastics injection molding for General Motors when the cars had to be switched over from steel bodies to more and more plastic to make them lighter when the 70s oil crisis hit. But the plant wouldn't have even been capable of being used for that purpose, for that central role, if it had not been for the intervention that John F. Kennedy made as one of his first acts as President of the United States, where the story is that sometime after the Korean War, the plant was going to be, it had gone up for auction because it was owned by the government and they weren't using it for anything at that point. It wasn't being operated by anyone. And so the highest bid went to a scrap metal company in Indiana, and that was seen as unacceptable to the newly elected President Kennedy, who, responding to the clamor of the citizens of Adrian, Michigan, and after being confronted in a press conference as to what he's going to do about the fact that this plant, this huge World War II-era plant, was just going to be scrapped, turned into metal, he decided that the plant would have to go up again for auction, and could only, with the provision this time that it would only be sold to a company which actually intends to use that plant for the purposes of producing things. And so it ended up being sold to another aluminum company located in California and employed hundreds of people at that time. And so it wasn't scrapped. And so it probably saved that community. And I'm sure there's probably dozens of other stories of this type. But it really does give you a sense that the more than this fad of globalization and free trade, the deeper history of the United States, as Kennedy reflected, was the history of the United States government in public-private cooperation, understanding and acting upon the principle, a real sense of what real value is in an economy, as opposed to just a notion of property or the market forces, I guess you could say.
Right. Let me ask a couple more questions there, or back and forth. You all may want to kick something in here. But, Bill, I'll point out to people, what you just said about Adrian Michigan is likewise in this Executive Intelligence Review coverage of LaRouche's document on emergency legislation, Paul Gallagher's situation report, and then there's your history, I think in the form of a local book review, right, on the history of Adrian Michigan. But you interviewed a lot of union leaders, and these interview segments appear in this DVD I mentioned on Retooling Auto for Economic Survival and Revival. And in the course of this, because the DVD is only about 1 hour, but you also toured unused capacity of a rolled sheet metal storage facility, I think, in Detroit or nearby, right? So you probably see on the ground the kind of thing Paul was just summarizing, that all the hundreds of thousands of square feet that could be put to use. Is that right, Bill?
Yeah, that's true. In discussing this, even recently, we've been deploying at the Ford complex of the River Rouge, which was a plant that was employing, I think, something like 90,000 people in World War II, probably one of the largest manufacturing complexes in the world. Today, I think it's got about 6,000 people working there in total, and this is a huge complex. So I've been asking workers recently, pointing to the cover of the Prolegomena, LaRouche's prologue for a platform for the Democratic Party. I've been pointing to the cover of that platform and asking the workers there, do you think that you guys could build pretty much everything in this picture? And there's a nuclear power plant in the picture, and there's a canal lock system, and bridges and some other infrastructure. And what they said is that probably we could, if not this plant alone, then some of the other plants, you know, in this complex could build these things for sure. And virtually everyone of these workers, whether they're a skilled worker or on the assembly line, realizes that that's true. And there's an enormous amount of idle capacity that I've seen, and there's a huge potential for it to be retooled.
Paul, do you want to say more on this?
Well, it reflects the fact, what Bill's reporting reflects the fact that the statement of LaRouche itself came out of a meeting that he had on the 27th of April. There were 50 people there, more than 50, but among them 50 people who were leaders of local organizations of either the United Auto Workers or other labor unions. Some of them were local elected officials, state legislators, but the majority of them unionists of that type. They pressed for this. LaRouche gave them this path by which the auto sector can be saved, and by the way, the aerospace sector can be saved also. They know they can do it. They know they can do all of these things. In the document that I have been summarizing of our discussions with them, we identify some of the specific plants where gates for locks and dam systems can be built, some of the specific plants which have done nuclear parts work, nuclear power parts work in the past, some places where rail can be built, especially St. Louis, the St. Louis plant complex, which could be a hub for building high-speed rail. But they also have an overview of it, that many of them, that this is national security of the United States involved here, because between auto and aerospace, they are the remaining machine tool capability that we have. And to give an idea how powerful this is and how threatened it is, General Motors, among its 100,000 production employees roughly, has about 1,700 skilled tool and die makers. And they make the machinery that operates all the plants that all these other workers use in building their products. And they can make, as they know, they can make that machinery do just about anything else, and they have the plant layouts to do it. But those very functions are disappearing even more rapidly than the auto production and assembly plants themselves. So that where there were, in General Motors operations, some 1,700 to 1,800 skilled machinists at the beginning of this year, by July there are more likely to be 700 or 800. Three of the five centers are being idled. These functions are going to Asia, to a lesser extent to Mexico, but to countries in Asia. And these, so they understand what Congress has to understand, that if at some point in the not distant future, and they make this clear in the DVD documentary we made, if some point in the not distant future we were to be in hostilities involving other countries in that region of the world, and if at that time our entire machine tool design capability had meanwhile been moved to these Asian countries, what would happen? What predicament would the United States then be in? And this is happening, and this is a process that they see being finished and done with by the end of 2007, and the United States essentially having no machine tool capability at all anymore, at least outside aerospace and military, and that itself is being outsourced. So this legislation, this emergency legislation that LaRouche is demanding be drafted and moved in the Congress, is not just to save auto, it's to save the industrial capabilities that remain of this nation.
Well, Paul, you mentioned national security, and as you said, when Bill Roberts and Adam Sturman were interviewing skilled trades and machine tool specialists in the United Auto Workers in Michigan, they kept saying that, kept stressing the national security. How are you going to make munitions? What if we ever went to war? Mm-hmm. Mr. LaRouche has also stressed something in particular about that we should look towards rebuilding the military instead of the Halliburton outsourcing British East India Company mercenary model, which we've been seeing with Dick Cheney and so forth over time, that the Army Corps side or function of the central role of engineering should be built up. Could you just say more about this, that you've talked to LaRouche in the last 24 hours, I think?
Well, two things. First of all, anybody who's read anything by about the early phases of World War II, when our military was being built up, anything written by Franklin Roosevelt's cabinet members and other collaborators at that time, knows that they had a category that they called machine tools. And when they had a conference, when Roosevelt, Churchill, or Roosevelt and his commanders had a conference, they would come out of the conference and say, well, as a result of the decisions we've taken here on the course of the war, we have to send the following orders to General Eisenhower, the following mission statement to General Marshall, and the following instructions to machine tools. And you can read that over and over again in those memos. What did they mean by machine tools? They meant that in a time of national emergency, they had pooled the machine tool capabilities of U.S. industry as a whole under the Defense Production Board, and they had created, as LaRouche put it recently, a very large inventory of machine tools with U.S. government stickers on them that anybody could use who was going to produce anything that was of urgent value to the mobilization, the war effort, the industrialization of the United States. And that capability to them was absolutely essential, as central as any army or any combination of armies that could be deployed against fascism at that time. When Lynn was discussing this yesterday morning with members of the LaRouche Youth Movement all over the world, he was put it in the context of financial breakdown, the hyperinflationary pressure which has built up into a huge bubble in the commodities markets, and at the same time the ongoing crashing of the real estate bubbles, the financial collapse in which this collapse of auto and machine tools is taking place, and that therefore this represents a last step, literally a last national security step, that the country's leadership still can take in order to have the capability to to deal with that collapse. So I'll leave it at that.
Right. Well, let's, speaking of national leadership and what's happening, Michael Rowland, you're there in Washington, D.C. You've been seeing people. How much or how little of what leaders should need to know do you find in offices in on Capitol Hill in Congress? Or how do you want to characterize the situation you're dealing with?
Well, the interesting thing is, because I've been organizing here in D.C. for almost a year now, and shortly before, you know, I joined the youth movement, Lynn had just put out his statement with the, you know, the famous Recreate Our Economy pamphlet about the auto industry. And you know, that's pretty much been the hot topic that we've been organizing around with a lot of these legislative staffers in these congressional offices. You know, the main thing is this emergency legislation to retool the auto industry. And, you know, we would brief these guys going through everything from, you know, the Arsenal of Democracy example through, you know, maglev trains. You know, most of them didn't even know what maglev was. And by the end of the conversations, they would always say, well, what specific legislation do you have for us, right? You know, as if, you know, we were the ones to actually hand them here, you know, here's the legislation that you guys actually have to make up. So the good thing about what
Lynn
just put out.
As if you were lobbyists, huh?
What's that?
As if you were lobbyists.
Yeah, exactly.
The K Street Bunch.
And we're going to take them out golfing.
One of the meetings that I was in with Mark Swayze during one of the weeks of action, this was a Democratic office from Ohio. The chief of staff, she was like, well, you know, if you guys want to be good lobbyists, quote unquote, you know, you have to come in here with your nice little package of legislation. So it's, I mean, you can definitely see a shift in their way of thinking. Not just in the Congress, but the population in D.C. in general, which, again, you know, going back a year ago, I found it very, very tough to organize on the streets, you know, name-calling and bad-mouthing LaRouche was very frequent. But now, especially, you know, since this forecast that LaRouche put out about the housing bubble, more and more people you find taking things much more seriously.
Right. Well, let me throw a question out to all of you. Well, first, I'm going to take a short halftime break, just a few program announcements that we do in the middle of the show each week. But just to remind you, this is the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, May 6th. We are live from 3 to 4 Eastern Time out of the United States on the following website, www.larouchepub.com. LaRouchePub.com. And we invite you, in fact, we urge you to check on that website, but also check on the Political Action Committee of Mr. LaRouche. That's www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePAC.com. And make sure and get the statement that our guests are talking about that Mr. LaRouche is issued May 3rd on emergency action by the federal government is needed now to intervene to save and expand the auto and machine tool sector of our nation. And you can call anytime at the following toll-free number. It's 1-888-347-3258. That's 1-888-347-3258. And see about the document we're talking about and related material. And make sure and listen May 13th. As I say, we're weekly, and we may follow this up. There's a lot happening. Paul or Bill Roberts may say, too, I think there's strike votes being taken among the Delphi auto plants of the nation. We can get to that. But Michael and in Detroit, Bill and Paul Gallagher here in the studio, one thing that if you look at the map that EIR is making available of what's called 64 so-called excess auto plants, that's being called by the vultures in Wall Street, their excess. If you look at them as assets of our nation that could be reorganized and then put to use by the Federal Infrastructure Corporation, if you in a lot of the towns, everything from Irwin, Pennsylvania, where the GM stamping plant, it used to be known as Fisher Body, is one of the Fisher Body plants, to St. Louis, where the Ford Motor Assembly Plant was just shut down in March. It's in technically Hazelwood, which is near adjacent St. Louis. There's a lot of local actions of people trying to say, well, we should find something else to come in here. A toy company in Muncie, Indiana, at a GM transmission plant, they're thinking they should turn it into a museum because it used to be BorgWarner. It goes back 85 years. Everyone has their local outlook on this. I understand Saginaw, Michigan has an organization called Saginaw Future because three auto-related plants are on the line to be shut there. What do you do about this? I'll ask Bill Roberts first, but Michael or Paul can... What's involved in this kind of thinking, Michael? Bill?
Well, I think it's the same sort of thing that LaRouche is criticizing the Congress about, because it reflects the idea that the problem is some sort of local or specialized area of the economy is just not doing well or something like that. And, you know, in particular, LaRouche took this up in terms of this tendency to want to say, well, the problem right now, and I'm talking about in the Congress, the problem right now is that the gas prices are too high and people are feeling that at the gas pump. So because they're feeling that, and that's what people can feel, you know, and we respond to feelings, then what we'll do is we'll take some action to put some cap on, or maybe some investigation to see if price gouging is occurring or something like that. And what LaRouche pointed out is that this is completely besides the point. You know, the issue is that the financial system is in an end phase right now, and what we need more people to be doing is to be coming out of the sort of fantasy land of economy being the sort of game of money and get into actually thinking about the type of national planning which Roosevelt brought into his administration, which is, you know, the physical scientific process of how you go about restoring the productivity of the nation. So I don't know. I think maybe on a local level, people are just sort of demoralized, and they feel as though that the Democratic Party is not really doing enough to actually take leadership. If they were, people would respond, and people would immediately, become invigorated to know that there is this potential, and that, you know, they don't have to try to you know, go back to school and learn how to, you know, do something on the, you know, in the IT sector because they don't have a manufacturing job anymore. I think that's the sort of stuff when people go around talking about that, I think that really demoralizes people. So, I mean, there's no local solution. It's not individual problems.
Bill, did you see? Did you see this in Lansing, Michigan? I mentioned that you were up there for the day for a rally last night. Could you just say something about that? We had a quick report from your associate, Joe Smalley, last week, just for about 5 minutes. But what happened?
Mm-hmm. Well, there were a lot of UAW leaders, and there were some elected officials, senators, I think, and some people. Probably other elected officials, and they were just, I mean, it was a sort of a recognition that there is, you know, that the sort of happy days are, someone actually said the happy days are over. It was actually kind of depressing. It was good. What was optimistic about it was that, you know, here are all these people actually ready to be mobilized, and we were of course there to mobilize them, but I found that the speeches of the local leaders reflected a certain type of of sort of demoralization that there isn't it reflected a lack of a sense of a solution, and but it was on the sort of upside, it was a call for an approach to this crisis, which is not just save our pensions, save our jobs. There was mention of the need for universal health care, and there was, you know, some discussion of other things of that sort. But I don't know. It underpinned a lot of the, the need for leadership, so also some fears, I guess you could say.
Can I just add that we called on Thursday, I believe it was, we called a number of people in Saginaw, Michigan, from here in Virginia, and found right away, this was just on the basis of having met one of them a couple of days before and went from one to another organization, and found right away that the town is potentially up in arms over what to do to save or use the not one but three auto plants there, which if all three of them were to close down, two are Delphi and one is GM, if they were all to close down, that would lay off the equivalent of 10% of the population of the city, which is shrunken as it is, down to about 60,000. It would completely devastate the area. So those people are on their way into Washington this week, flying in to see Congress, to hit Congress on this. Now, our job is to make clear not what an individual to those people, and we did, and they were very excited, not what an individual congressman might be pled with to do about an individual locale to see if maybe there's a hospital that'll buy some test tubes that could be made in this plant or something like that in the service economy, but rather to get together with other congressmen and at one stroke make a national solution, because that's the only thing that can work in this situation. There, for example, one of those plants, the steering plant in Saginaw, has huge, multiple huge 2,000-ton presses in very large work bays. They're three stories tall and three stories under the ground. Their basing is three stories under the ground. It's in a heavy equipment, large work area like that, with additional precision machine tools, you can very easily take locks and dams and make them in those auto plants. Now, if you look at the upper Midwest, you see there's a desperate collapse, a slow motion collapse of all the locks and dams on the upper Mississippi, the Ohio, the Missouri. And for several years, a lot of members of Congress have been trying to allocate funds, capital funds, to replace all these collapsing 80-year-old locks and dams with new ones, much bigger, more modern ones. Now they've got majorities in both houses, but the White House opposes it, and the Army Corps of Engineers doesn't encourage it because it's beyond their capabilities. This act would involve $4 billion worth of immediate capital expenditures, which Congress would like to pass, but it's beyond the capabilities of the Army Corps of Engineers to use, and the White House is blocking the bill. Now, there's where the auto plants come in, because you can none of these things have been built. When they break down on the rivers, the Army Corps doesn't even have a replacement set of gates or locks to replace them with. These can be made and made on a mass basis in the auto plants. Then you'd have the basis for actually doing something which is critical to the nation's infrastructure all down the middle of the country, from the Canadian border down to the Gulf, and you'd employ these vital capacities in doing it. Another one which has been talked about by a number of these labor leaders is that they can build armor. And through all this drama that we went through for 2 years about the lack of armor for the Humvees in Iraq, and this one little corporation that was huffing and puffing and trying to build enough armor to up-armor these Humvees, all the time Congress could have turned to the auto plants in the upper Midwest, given them mass orders for high-quality personal and vehicle armor, and they would have gotten it. And those troops would not have lost their lives unnecessarily, and you would have had the proper use of that kind of industrial capacity, because these plants are already making armor for police departments and so on. That's where the real industrial machine tool capability is.
Right. I think it's something like 17 locks and dams need a complete rehab on the upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers from the Army Corps of Engineers' original proposal. That's how many are outmoded,
which basically means there has to be a new lock and dam built next to them.
Yes,
and replaced
a bigger them. One, yeah. Or a, yes, exactly. Well, we have more to be asked about also the spin-off effects, the large number of jobs that would be created all along the line. But we have an email from Carol Smith, who's an auto worker in Indiana and Kentucky, and I'd like to throw out a couple questions from Carol. And let me just summarize that, because she mentions first that Monday night she's involved in pulling together a meeting on just going over the kind of thing you all have been talking about. So for Bill, and she's in the Louisville area and in southern Indiana, but she asks Bill if you're familiar with with Mount Elliott Tool and Die right in Detroit, that they had a threatened closure in 2003, however it came to pass, they're there, and this year won the Daimler Chrysler's Manufacturing Excellence Award. So that's UAW Local 212, and she quotes the UAW Local 212 President Roy Hamilton, who said, "The idea of cells, that may be how they're doing things," she can explain, "but the idea of cells came from workers right here on the shop floor. This completely changed the way we produce dies." So they had an innovation that vastly increased the productivity. I'll just ask the question of Paul. Otherwise, Carol has a question about the St. Louis complex of automotive capability, asking about Louisville, Kentucky's sister plant in St. Louis. That's at Hazelwood. It was just shut down in March this year. They were building the Ford Explorer and I think the Aviator, Sport Tracks, and so forth. But, Paul, you can comment. You are talking about this as an asset in the...
Right. Workers and union people in St. Louis have told us that the St. Louis could be a national hub, or the national hub, for the construction of the rolling stock, rail, and so forth, the elements of a high-speed rail system, because there are five big assembly plants there. One of them is the plant she's referring to, the Ford Hazelwood plant, which has closed last month, and its work has been moved. What remains of it has been moved to the Louisville plant. That's one of five assembly plants. They also have a lot of smaller suppliers, a lot of machine shops. They also have rail repair, which have been there for a while, rail car construction and repair shops. And these plants are well served by rail, which comes in and out of St. Louis. All the plants have rail doors as well as truck doors. It would be a simple matter, they have told us, for the plants in that area, or even some of them, to be converted in a matter of 4 to 6 months at the most for the production of high-speed electrified locomotives, electric locomotives, the rolling stock for high-speed electrified high-speed rail network around the country. It's easy to build it in St. Louis. It's easy to get it from St. Louis out around the rest of the country, because it's part of it's a hub of what remains of the nation's railroad system. So it's a natural employment of those capabilities, again, in something that in infrastructure that the country desperately needs. And that's what they want to save. They don't want to save every hubcap or for that matter, every car, but the capability to, as the auto industry has done for 70 years, the capability to retool convert and build what the nation needs most.
Thanks. And Bill, does this something known to you, Mount Elliott Tool and Die there in Detroit?
No, I don't know of that company.
We'll pass it along. We'll pass along the email to you. And I will clarify one thing from Carol, who is, as I said, who is an auto worker at the Ford plant complex in Louisville, that in the course of getting out the kind of initiative of LaRouche, just what we're talking about, she was actually invited to a political county hall meeting in southern Indiana across the river there, which is involved in election primary party period. So she'll be meeting with local civic government, state legislators, local sheriffs, other people running for office. And someone here was talking about a bill, I think, in Michigan, the need to reinvigorate the Democratic Party. That's certainly there's a good example. And from that point of view, too, let's go back again to Washington, D.C., where, Michael, do you want to throw anything more here? You mentioned there is a change of mood that you've personally seen in the last year on the streets of the Capitol and on Capitol Hill. Do you have any questions or any other observations about the congressional delegations and what would help or what's hot or what's not in Washington?
Well, actually, one question that I guess Bill could answer. There was this question yesterday that Steve Jeffrey had brought up to Lynn in this briefing about, how we're going to recruit these auto workers. You know, more less. You know, having a mindset that they're coming into Congress to kind of, beg for crumbs, so to speak. You know that they're out there to save their pensions and so forth, but really to get them, toward a higher conception of they're on a national mission, because this is obviously a national crisis. And I'm wondering if, any of these guys have been organized more toward, a greater cause. I mean, I don't mean, they're not breaking down the Leibniz and the Gauss like we are here in the youth movement, but, is there, more of a intellectual type mindset among, some of what, people may stereotype as your, blue collar type?
Bill, do you want to say something about that? Paul also, I'm sure, does a lot of talking to people. But what do you think, Bill?
Paul, why don't you take that? I'll think about it for a second.
Well, I was just reading this message, but it seems to me that what most impresses me is that there's, I mentioned it before, is that there's a very strong sense developing among those union representatives and other workers who are facing this situation, that they can speak in terms of the national interest and national security of the United States, and that they have to do so. And they're looking at a situation in the next few weeks in which strike is really getting very, very likely.
What is the latest on that?
Well, it's a day-to-day thing in which there are more and more provocations on the part of the management of the Delphi Corporation, which was put in there in order to do this. Yeah. There's already now the hiring through newspaper advertisements around the country that we're picking up. They're hiring replacement workers between $10 and $14 an hour. There was an incident that occurred yesterday at one of the plants in Dayton, Ohio, very clearly provoked in order to just stoke anger. Provoked by the management of the plant there. One person was fired, another person was arrested for no reason at all. And in given what Delphi has been doing in court, it's becoming very, very hard to avoid a strike. Now, if a strike takes place, that will tend to concentrate the attention of Congress, since, as you were saying earlier, their feeling states tend to run to whatever people are most being most vocal about for that 24-hour or 12-hour period of time. But it will concentrate the attention of individuals in Congress to the need to understand this situation. At this point, the people that we're talking to and collaborating with in the who work in that industry understand the national security implications of this a lot better than the congressmen do.
Yeah, I would say that in terms of a lot of the people who are involved in the tool and die industry probably have some of the best understanding. It's probably the closest thing to an actual understanding of physical economy that you're going to find. So there tends to be an immediate, you find a spark of creativity within some of these individuals around the possibility of what mankind could become, of what the economy could come to be, and as opposed to a sort of very pragmatic thinking of economy. But in terms of the workers and your general population that you find here in the Midwest, who is closely, a lot of times, you know, people have people in the auto industry and manufacturing industry in their family. It's just very common still here in the Midwest. But there has to be what was done in L.A. with our youth movement, where you have large, you have town hall meetings where you discuss. I mean, Cody Jones had a discussion at a town hall meeting on the transmutation of elements. And so I think that's the right sort of approach. You start from the 50 years down the line, that sort of conception, even though, you know, a lot of these people aren't going to be alive, you know, to see a colony on Mars, or, you know, to see the transformation of the American desert or something like that. I think that's the type of thing that gets people to think in terms of not my pension, my job, because that just tends to get people stuck in a sort of rut. But to mobilize around a conception of what greater good can be created, and I think that's the right approach. I think and I think people are ready for that type of leadership, that type of true leadership.
Yeah, I'll throw in here. One thing is the response. We've naturally in this hour, and we still have a few minutes, concentrated a lot on the auto states, the auto cities, the auto sector, and the Congress from those states. But in this call to action that LaRouche has thrown out in this particular very focused outline for what Congress needs to do, you have other people responding. There's some people in West Texas who hosted Harley Schlanger, whom we all know on this show, on May 3rd or May 4th in Lubbock, Texas, which is a longtime ranching area, and cotton and cattle and so forth, which is one of the centers in the country for the lowering of the water table there in the High Plains Aquifer, the Ogallala Aquifer. And they had hours of discussion about what had to be done. They're obviously not an auto center, but it's going to be the individuals who can respond and not get in the rut that Bill was just talking about, or Michael asking about, who I think are going to make all the difference now. Hence, we want to keep reiterating to those listening and participating in this on the conference call or on this internet show that we're in a very critical time period on this to act and to spread the word. But in the agriculture sector, in the military, in non-auto situations, especially a lot of the West, it's true. You do have a plant in Irvine, California, an auto plant that's ready to be axed, but it's obviously not a local issue. And in that regard, let me just mention in passing, thanks for the email that just came in that's saying, what about some of the news of the day where in the last week there was a South American President's Club, that is of several nations, that did get together, and some of them are going against, like President Kirchner of Argentina, going against the world cartel, globalizer, Sinarchist companies. But they don't have a vision of what the world ought to have in the future. Paul might want to say something more. I would just recommend that it's in flux, that it's not as if there's a fully developed program, but it's a question of what direction things are moving in. And as you know, this kind of thing has got tremendous potential, especially if we here in the United States draw the right lines, like the line drawn against the international figure, Felix Rohatyn, in the Democratic Party, who's done so much damage in South America and all around the world. Do you want to say anything about that email, Paul?
There was a very potentially important meeting of the presidents of Bolivia, Venezuela, Argentina, and Brazil, and it was brought on by the nationalization of gas and oil a few days ago, announced by Bolivia. So, you know, obviously these presidents who are backing up each other's steps towards sovereignty, you could put it that way, and, you know, they're facing a combination of the might of the United States on the one hand and the most powerful corporations in the world on the other. So one doesn't expect them to move the world just because they are having meetings of presidents and trying to do something to take the pressure off their own countries. But they are confronting the one of the causes for this hyperinflationary bubble in commodities, which is dragging the world financial system down. That is these continuous mergers and acquisitions and expansions of the size of the companies in these raw material areas. And it's something that is interesting because it's something that if the Congress in the United States were serious about gas prices and such things that they've recently been venting about, as LaRue said it last week at his webcast, they would trust bust. And unless they're prepared to trust bust, that means reverse some of the scores and scores of major mergers which have taken place in these primary commodities and raw materials fields. They can't do anything about this price inflation. So in that sense, what's occurring recently in among these South American countries is interesting. But as I say, we know who has to act in order for this situation to be turned around, and they know who has to act, that they're not in a position to carry the world in their arms.
Right, the battle is joined. We have about 2.5 minutes today, and I would like to just see from all three of our guests if they want to put any their 2 cents worth in before the clock is drawing us to a close. But in Washington, D.C., in particular, Michael, you're going to be laying plans for coordinated action, pressure, whatever you have to do to Congress, right? Or what do you have anything to say about that at this moment?
Well, in fact, yesterday, you know, obviously the report that Lynn just issued isn't out in an EIR yet, but we had printed out, you know, several copies for our closest contacts in Congress and made sure, you know, every office got the DVD, you know, made sure that those key people got the legislation report that Lynn just put out. And, you know, hopefully next week we can up the ante and give them a good kick in the rear, because that's what some of these guys need, frankly.
Good. And anyone who thinks differently, get out of the way, right, Paul?
Yeah, the question for those guys really is, for our elected leaders, is do you think we can subsist as a country with no industry whatsoever and no infrastructure whatsoever on the basis of the latest reports of GDP and the latest reports of the value of homes in Santa Cruz or whatever it is? Can we eat GDP, or are we going to actually restore ourselves as a country with industry? They have to act on that. They have to do it right away.
And Bill, you're in the middle of the entire auto sector of the world there in Detroit, Michigan. Do you want to say in the final seconds, you're going to go all out? I understand you'll have some more LaRouche Youth Movement, a person or two come in, and what's your forward look there?
Well, what we're focusing on is preparing ourselves intellectually to be able to communicate to everyone the idea of what's the difference between the type of bailout of the banking system that LaRouche is talking about, because it is a type of bailout of the banking system. But it's not the same type of bailout of the banking system which Alan Greenspan used after 1987. So to communicate the idea of the difference between those two actions, the qualitative difference, we're going to be focusing our intellectual work around that, the implications of Alexander Hamilton's report on public credit, and getting this out, getting this conception, this unified conception, to the population and to these labor networks.
Okay, well, our time is up, and we have more emails. I'm sorry we didn't get to them, but keep at it. We'll be here next week, which is May 13th. This has been the May 6th, The LaRouche Show. And I thank Paul, Bill, and Michael. So we are weekly, 3 to 4 in the afternoon, and please stay tuned. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you very much for participating, and good afternoon.